We're sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that braces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
Let me tell you, no exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls, just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free
in the
App Store.
Boom, bow, 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 ooh, ba ba ba, bow, bow. Is that a song? That's not what I was expecting. That was so sexual. Hello.
I know. I wanted to make you laugh. I wanted to start off on a good note.
You know how to do it to me.
I know.
You know how to do it to you.
You
know how to do it to me. Hi, I'm Mackenzie.
I am Ned.
And this is Wisteria Gay, a podcast. I haven't done this in a hot second. A podcast where we talk about Desperate Housewives.
We talk about Desperate Housewives here?
We do. Talk about Desperate Housewives.
Thank God.
This fucking ambulance going by.
Good. They're coming to get me.
The ambulance is the ambiance because we had a very incredible episode. I'm keeping it all in.
That made me fucking choke. I don't know why that made me fucking choke.
we have hospitals, we have death, we have it all. The ambulance, I planned it. I called 911 and asked them to come by. That's why they were driving by, because I said I need this sound effect, but I need it to feel real, you know. Today we are talking about season 3, episode 15. This episode premiered February 18th, 2007, 3 days after my birthday.
Crap.
Yeah, crap. I turned 12. this was written by Mark Cherry.
Whoa.
Ever freaking heard of him?
No.
He's the creator of Desperate Housewives.
That's really cool. I'm glad he's getting work. Is he still getting work?
Yeah, he's making Women Who Kill.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And Joe Keenan. And this was directed by David Grossman. For hashtag Sondheim Watch, this episode was called The Little Things You Do Together, and it's from the musical Company.
Whoa.
Maybe my favorite Sondheim. Who knows? Stay tuned. For Wisteria International in France, this was called A Life Without Secrets. And in Germany, this was called Devilish. And that's it. Those are the only two fun ones.
Awesome.
Wow. This episode was also very wild, and I want to preface, there was a reason why. I don't know if could you tell why maybe it was a little wild.
Was this a finale of sorts?
I mean, it is.
I say that every other episode. Every other episode I go, this had to have been a finale. It's what, episode 3?
It kind of is. So this is the wrap up for the season mystery. And if you'll check the watch, yeah, we have 8 episodes to go for this season.
So wait, this was the wrap up?
Yes. So this was the wrap up of the season mystery. We have 8 episodes of filler ? To go, because what happened was, as we are very well aware of, Marsha Cross was very, very pregnant. Brie is obviously very integral to this mystery. So they kind of had to wrap up the mystery quicker so that she could go on maternity leave.
Is Brie just not going to be in the last 8 episodes?
This is no spoilers. I don't remember the specifics. I think they just like find an excuse for her to like go on a vacation. I mean, doesn't Orson say to her like, we're going to go on a honeymoon? Like, I think they literally just find like, I think they just find like a non-threatening reason to get rid of her for a second and or use body doubles for her so that she could go on maternity leave. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I genuinely don't remember what happens to Brie. But yeah, they let her go on a break for a second so that they can. And they probably also front loaded filming maybe too. Who knows?
Yeah. Going on a second honeymoon would make sense because they never got to go on their first.
Yeah. So yeah, they're going to like Marsha Cross is going to go on maternity leave. So that is if you were watching this episode for the first time with us and you were like, why does this feel like a finale? It's because it kind of is, because it is technically the wrap up of the season mystery. But I checked. Damn. I was like, what the fuck is, because I've seen this before. I have the worst memory. I looked and I was like, what are these last episodes going to be? And I think we got some fun stuff. Even though
okay,
quote unquote season mystery, we got a lot of juice.
I want Edie to come back. I hope we get some Edie.
We are. We're going to get some Edie. It's going to be great.
Well, there is still fun stuff because we'll talk about it in the episode.
We'll get it. But yeah, I wanted to preface this because I was curious how you felt, because even by the end of the episode, everything's like tied in a little bow. It's so neat.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we get like a mini season after this, kind of, with 8 episodes.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do season we want to dive 3B. In? Yeah. Orson Hodge always assumed his life would flash before his eyes when he died. We see him slow motioning down the building.
I loved that shot. I actually thought it looked kind of cool. The like
it was great.
Floating shot was really cool.
Yeah, you don't see shots like that in a lot of television.
No.
So good on you, Mark Cherry. David Grossman. But instead of his life flashing before his eyes, he was taken back to the night Monique died. And we find out, in a twist of events, he comes to tell Monique that he has great news, because I'm assuming the night Monique died was the night that he was leaving Alma.
Yes.
And his mother is at Monique's house.
How the fuck did she find her?
How does she get in? And how does she, I'm sorry, spoiler alert, everybody, Monique died because Mother Hodge killed her.
Yeah. Just I bludgeoned her to death with a, Jesus. with Mike's wrench, I guess.
How much strength, I mean, if it is a wrench.
Yeah. It's pretty heavy. I think one little hit on the temple, you're out.
Yeah.
You're deaderino.
Jeez.
And it's just it's wild. I mean, we and then we see the scene we've already kind of seen, right, with Mike mm-hmm. coming in. They have to very quickly move the body around. Gloria has to hide. We've already seen this, right, the Mike bringing the part over.
Yeah.
And then we see them bury Monique.
So Orson and his mother like got this body out of this like Monique's house, drove all the way to the golf course, got into the golf course while nobody was there, buried the body. His mom fell in the hole and broke her hip.
And then that's kind of all we see, right?
Yeah. It cuts back and
we see your bride.
We see Ida.
We get her a couple times in this episode.
Yeah, we do. It's awesome.
Ida wakes up to her cat purring. And that's how I wake up every morning too, except my cat's going, give me food at my door. And yeah, like Edie's waking up, Susan's like everyone's just like waking up in the morning, and Gabby is waking up next to a mostly naked Zach Young. Hell.
Yes.
And he's like, "Hey, we fucked."
Yes, it's very much we fucked.
Did you believe him? Oh, I was just about to ask. Well, I mean, I knew, right? Like I knew going into this being like clearly they didn't fuck. But did you think they fucked having not seen this before?
No. I applied a horror movie logic, which is, unless we see it, it didn't happen.
There we go.
And I genuinely believe Gabby would never have sex with Zach.
Even drunk. Even drunk. Also, how much wine did she have to be blackout on wine?
She could have drank 2 bottles.
That's intense.
Someone listening is like, I'm on my 3rd bottle right now. I feel fine.
Yes.
This scene is essentially just Gabby losing her mind at the aspect of her having sex with Zach. Because he says, like, yeah, that's what happened. And she kicks him out.
Yes. And then we'll get to it later, but the payoff of this bit is the craziest shit to me. But first we have to go to the Scavo house. Lynette wakes up as well, but to an empty bed. She goes downstairs to find Tom panic making a bazillion breadsticks in their home. Because the opening is tonight.
Yes, it's opening night.
Opening night. It's opening night.
Yes, he is bugging.
He's totally bugging because he's worried about this opening. And Lynette's like, go take a Xanax and go to bed. I'll handle it. And that's it. Like, we have a little short little quippy scenes in this.
Yeah.
Because then
there was a small thing about, like, she had to order chairs.
Yes.
Right? She had to make sure there was enough chairs ordered for opening.
And that's going to be her
weekend.
Whole thing.
Yeah.
First, we got to go back to the hospital. We get to Bree. She has a hurt foot, I suppose, ankle situation. She wakes up to see sweet little Andrew holding her hand, and he looks so sweet and sad.
He's like, hello, mommy.
Hello, mommy. I love you.
And Bree wants to talk to Orson. But Andrew said he's in the hospital as well because he tried to kill himself because he felt so bad that he tried to kill you.
Yeah, Andrew was like, he cut that wrong. He's bad. He's a bad boy. And I'm curious. I mean, I didn't really get the impression that Bree believed him, but she seemed scared and confused.
Yeah, I think she was just, she was more scared that Orson was in the hospital. I don't think she believes that he tried to kill himself.
No. And I should say, this episode, like the whole episode, like 50% of it talks about suicide. So just be aware of that as we wade through the waters of this episode, that that is up for discussion a lot kind of throughout.
Mm-hmm. And there is, what is it? It's not said that she's drugged, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is it called?
Roofing, drugging, that kind of happens later. I don't know what to call it. We can talk about it later if we want.
And as that scene closes, we get Bree reassuring Andrew that everything is all right. She wants to go to the police. She just can't tell him about it right now. Mm-hmm. And... we get Ian and Susan at the hospital, ready to pick up James' things, but a very confusing happenstance happens, and they get Mike Delfino's things, who has checked out of the hospital like a month ago.
Yeah, makes no sense. But well, real quick before we get into the Mike stuff, we do get this little Susan Bree moment, too. Because she sees Andrew. Yeah, because like he gets the mic box while Susan's distracted. Because she sees Andrew. She's like, Andrew, what are you doing here? And he's like, you didn't hear? My mommy is down there. And I actually really liked this scene. Susan and Bree reconcile after, like, honestly kind of half a season of fighting that they didn't really dive into as much. Other than they had the big fallout, right? They had the huge fallout at dinner. Yeah. And then we haven't really seen them speak for like five episodes. And they make up, and I actually wanted to nominate them for Lesbian of the Episode for being soft and sweet and loving each other. And I loved that rom-com line of, I'm glad we're friends again. And then Susan turns back and goes, we never really stopped. Are you kidding me? Great line. That was a great line.
Yeah.
And she also, Bree tells Susan that Mike's innocent. She's like, I know I have evidence, and we're gonna go to the police. We're going to get Mike's name cleared. And it's just a really beautiful moment.
Maybe I mistook Andrew for Susan.
Who knows?
I mean, there's no way to tell. It's not like we can go back and watch the episode. We then go back to Ian looking through Mike's box.
How the fuck did he get Mike's box? How the fuck?
I mean, the only way I would understand Mike's box still being at the hospital is Mike forgot to get it when he left.
And he got arrested immediately.
Yes. And also he didn't know it was there.
I guess, yeah.
But they should give him his stuff if he's checking out of the hospital. And he very obviously didn't get Jane's stuff.
Because Jane's a dead person. So, like, she wouldn't have been able to get her own things. But Mike, he should have just gotten them on his way out the door. You are so correct.
The only thing that they didn't give him the ring?
I don't know. I thought Ian was going to steal it. Did you think he was going to? I thought he was going to fucking steal it. I didn't see him pocket it. I was like keeping an eye on it.
I think he does.
That's fucked up.
Because I was like, I think he's going to steal it and he's going to propose with that ring.
That's.
Because I think that's what he does. Please, please, if I am wrong, somebody.
I didn't see him pocket it and he didn't pull a ring out during the proposal, but I was expecting him to. I am very confused. What he's going to do with this information.
Now I'm worried I'm wrong.
Hey, it's okay. Who cares?
Who cares? We're moving on.
All I know is this is stupid. And this was one of like two moments of information that I thought was stupid. I thought this like the getting of the ring was dumb.
Yeah. I think it's just to set up the rest of the season.
And then we get another kind of weird moment of information and exposition in this next scene with Carlos as well. Because Carlos gets a call from the doctor about Orson. Why the fuck would Carlos get the call about Orson? I don't understand.
What? No, Mike is telling Carlos about Orson.
No, Carlos gets a phone call and he's like, oh, he's in the hospital, but he's okay. Like, he has a call from the doctor's office and he tells Mike, like, he's alive. And then Mike is like, oh, man. And then they talk about it.
Did I watch this episode?
I don't know. I just thought this was like a weird scene. Because like, why would Carlos be getting a fucking phone call about Orson? And he's like, yeah, Orson's alive. And then they're best fucking friends. And then he tells Mike, like, yeah, Orson's alive. And then Mike is like, well, I hope he doesn't say what happened because I think that, like, he might think I tried to kill him. And then, like, Susan is standing, like, that fucking alien standing meme at the fucking door listening to them talk. And I just thought this was all stupid. I was like, what is this doing? That's the whole scene, though.
Yeah, because then we cut to Lynette. It's opening night.
Opening night.
And she ordered the wrong chairs. She got little kid, baby, poopy, diaper, child, toddler, fucking infant chairs.
They only serve babies at this pizzeria.
Listen, my big boy ass can't fit in those chairs.
Your big boy ass cannot. She's got to find big boy ass chairs.
Yes, she does. And she just starts calling every fucking place she can think of, trying to scrounge for chairs, yelling to people like, okay, put 3 down on the list. We have 3 more. We just need 22.
I love it's bar mitzvah season, so they can't, like, they can't. I was like, and I was just like, that doesn't exist. Which is true, because kids turn, you know, 13 at various points in the year. I just thought it was a funny line.
So did I. I thought it was great. We then cut back to Carlos and Gabby. Carlos knocks on Gabby's door, and he says,
"Does he have a fucking telescope on the house? He always is like, hey, I saw the milkman drop by 2 minutes ago. You want to say something about that?" Like, it feels like he is constantly scoping her house out to come talk to her about what happens at her house.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Because he's like, why did I see Zach Young in his underwear in your driveway this morning?
Yarp. And Gabby falls to her knees. Which just was fucking funny. Just falls to her knees, and she's like, I fucked him. I didn't even know. And he brings up a very good point that's like, if you don't remember, how do you actually know you had sex with this guy? Mm-hmm. The part where Lynette, the jump scare of Lynette coming out of the house with the chairs was so funny.
That was so fucking funny.
Hi, Carlos. Hi. And like 15 people with chairs walking out of the house.
I want that played on loop on my fucking gravestone. I need a gift. You know?
It was so fucking funny because, of course, Gabby has like 15 chairs at her dining table
that she's never using.
I love the idea of Lynette calling and being like, I'm going to be there in 5 minutes with a truck. I need all of your fucking chairs.
I like the thought that she goes to like every single person on the Lane's house.
Oh, it's so good.
Except for Brie.
I went that montage. Oh yeah, Brie would be like, excuse me, no.
I really liked the ending button on the scene as well, with Carlos just being like, I'm going to go warn the Scavo boys.
Oh my God. God. Yeah. Jeez. I love how we're 3 seasons in and her affair with John is going to permeate all of her life forever, mm-hmm. Which it should.
Everybody's going to dunk on her all the
statutorily
time.
Statutorily raped a 16-year-old boy, so as it should. Also, go watch John Tucker Must Die with us on our Patreon live now.
Pay what you can.
We watched John Tucker Must Die, so come hang out with us. And then we kind of cut back, right? We cut away to Orson. He's banged the fuck up. Mm-hmm. His face. I can't. He's Phantom of the Opera. I can't handle it. Yeah. He's in the hospital and he wants to speak to Brie. And he's mad that the hospital thinks he tried to kill himself because he's like, I didn't. I need mm-hmm. a physicist. I don't need a psychiatrist. But the psychiatrist is like, I'm not fucking leaving until you give me the exposition of your backstory.
Okay? It's also because he's like, you've been hospitalized before. And just mm-hmm. because of the policy, unless I know what you were hospitalized for, I can't do this.
So give me a black and white flashback, please. The doctor says.
Oh, we go there. Essentially, he caught his dad in the middle of having an affair. And shortly after that, his dad became an alcoholic. And he came home one day and he committed suicide. His dad, not Orson.
Yes. Orson was a ghost all along. That would be a twist.
Yeah.
Yes. And his mother blamed him. Mm-hmm. So we kind of find out the context for that comment earlier, right? And she holds this over his head because she is an abusive piece of shit.
Yeah.
And he just tells this to the doctor, basically. And is like, that's what happened to me. And that is obviously why he had to go to a hospital, because he was probably very upset and grieving combined mm-hmm. with mental illness and an abusive parent all at the same time. So, of course, when he was a kid, he needed to go somewhere to get help.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't be ashamed of that.
No. Sorry, this is the point in my notes when I started talking about Desperate Housewives Resident Evil.
There's a quick little moment where Gloria calls to ask about Bree, I think. She calls the hospital to be like, you know, how is the patient Hodge? And the hospital goes, which Hodge? And that's sort of how Gloria finds out that Orson is in the hospital. She goes up to knock on Alma's pain chamber and is like, hello, great news. Orson tried to kill himself, so he's clearly depressed, which is great for us because that means he wants to be with you. And Alma, in a moment of clarity, is like, girl, give it up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm ready to give up. He clearly doesn't love me.
I got my revenge.
Yeah, I mean, Alma's a rapist. Let's get this first and foremost.
Yes, I forgot. Oh, God.
Yeah. No, she's a rapist. She's not a good person. But I did feel, like, kind of bad for her here because she is ready to just, like, give this up. But Gloria is on a next level of unhinged. It's like, and, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah. I don't
know. She's been locked in the attic for, like, days. Has she been eating? Yeah. Like, is she
probably
okay?
Not.
Like, it's just kind of wild. And she, Alma just wants to be let out and let go. And Gloria is trying to keep her. And so Alma begins to unscrew this barrier that's on the window to try to escape through the roof.
And then we go to opening night.
Opening night.
Tom is really upset about the chairs.
Oh, he's pissed.
He's so pissed.
He's fuming. He's absolutely he's fuming.
Absolutely fuming. It is what it is, though. I can't.
We lose all of our UK listeners. That's kind of it. Basically, he's just pissed. And he's like, I don't want to fucking talk to you anymore. And bro, she did the best she could. I don't know. Mistakes happen. I understand his stress. But and I'm glad he ends up learning by the end of the episode. But like, mistakes happen. And we have to just like deal with them as they come along, you know?
Yeah, he's very in his head right now. He wants everything to go perfect. Because like opening night, he feels like could make or break him.
Can make or break it.
But we shortly cut to opening night. And it's a blast, right?
There's a quick Danielle thing.
Oh, yeah.
Did we do it? Or do you want to do it?
I can do it. Before we go to opening night, we go to, I guess, the Vandekamp household, because just the kids are there.
Yeah, like Andrew, because earlier we didn't, it was so small we didn't even mention it. Like Lynette calls Andrew and is like, I know your mom's in the hospital, but I really need that. Help. And so she, like, Andrew's leaving to go to work because of opening night, and Danielle has a bump it and she's pissed.
Yeah, because she wants to go to opening night.
All of her friends are going to be there. It's the hottest party in town, this pizzeria. And is she dating Austin? Do you think they're dating?
I don't think they're dating. I think they're probably I don't even know if they're still hooking up because he seems really broken up about Julie.
Yeah, who knows. But basically she's pissed because Bree is like, and I loved this Andrew because he's like, you need to fucking watch our mom and be a goddamn adult. I'm trying to work. I can't take care of her because I need to do this thing. Be a responsible person for once in your life. I was like, Andrew, drag her for filth. That's how we know he's gay.
Yeah.
Because he fucking drags her within an inch of her life.
We then cut to opening night and God, it's such a freaking hit.
Oh, it's a party.
Everybody's hanging out, having a good time. I believe we first go to Gabby and Carlos.
Well, Zach walks up first, but then yes.
What does Zach say to Gabby?
Zach does the most manipulative bullshit because he's like, I love being with you. I haven't been happy since my mom killed herself.
Yes, he's guilting her.
And she's like, are you fucking kidding me? Because then she goes over to Carlos and is like, he just played the Mary Alice card. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And she's like, you need to go beat him up, please.
I love calm Carlos. This season has been great because he's just chill. And he is weirdly like the most normal person on the show. And I don't know how this happened.
From now on.
Literally same. I don't know how the fuck this happened that he became the most like normal dude on the whole show. I love
it. Maybe he started going to therapy. Or maybe he was in a really bad relationship that was making him a bad person.
Yeah, he found God, too.
Yeah,
you know?
He found God.
I don't know. I kind of love this Carlos. He's calm. The actor is also just in the character a lot more in a way that feels more natural.
I feel like he's more comfortable. Yes. They are probably writing Carlos to better suit him. Now they're getting more, like, later into the seasons. Because it's all that, style where, like, yeah, you start off as a character, but as a show grows and
you grow into the character more,
you grow into that character and you just learn the nuances of how to play that character, people learn how to write for that character.
Yeah, and he just feels, I love the calmness of him now. I think he's like funnier because he's like chill and droll. Like, I just think this actor is doing a lot better with the material. And yeah, I really like, I like this version of Carlos. This episode I found him to be charming and funny. Which, yeah, never thought I'd fucking say in my life. And then the dumbest bullshit happens.
The best bullshit happens. We have Zach, a very Young epic is hung. He's
that's a rhyme.
Holy shit.
Zach Young is hung.
Shit.
Zach Young is hung. Shit. Zach Young is hung.
Holy shit. Gabby.
Zach Young is hung. Yeah, Carlos goes in to intimidate and sees that Zach Young has a huge dick, I guess.
He's got that huge magnum. Oh my god, I dropped my monster condom for my magnum dong. Except real. That's in parentheses.
Oh real. Me, 18M, huge dick, is trying to date my mom's friend.
31.
31F. Yeah. Oh, good lord. Yeah, I mean, I did think this was funny. Carlos just zipping his pants up, walking out and being like, you would have remembered that dick.
Everyone remembers that dick.
Everyone would have remembered. The thing of salami he hits to represent Zach Young's penis, yeah, was horrifying. Jeez. Oh, good lord. Do you think that actor was like, yeah, my character has a huge penis?
That would be fun. I would be that way. I'd be oh like, yeah.
What if the end of this episode was the end of, like, have you seen Boogie Nights?
Yes. Oh, what if, like, the end of Boogie Nights.
What if it was just Zach Young pulling his huge dick out and staring at himself in the mirror? Yeah, we need Zach Young to recreate the end of Boogie Nights. I want a gif. I'm requesting this from the world of the Gabby Carlos looks. The Gabby like, and the Carlos like. I want that on loop on my gravestone. That's the gif I want on my gravestone.
We then cut to the Vandekamp household again. Danielle, Mother Hodge comes in with a big old pot of soup.
It's not poisoned or anything, kid.
Nope.
She's it's literally just a my fucking, like, witch from Snow White. And Danielle is like, yeah, sure, this is fine.
Well, I think the purpose of Danielle's character is to be nothing but selfish.
That is true.
I think she's that's what I'm realizing.
Person. Yeah, 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 yeah. And also, here's the thing. The Vandekamp children have one brain cell, and 98% of the time, Andrew has it.
That is true.
And Danielle is just lost in the sauce, you know?
Mother Hodge says that she will take care of Bree while Danielle can go party. Just give her some of the soup before you go and tell her you made it. Don't tell her I'm here. It's not suspicious. Yeah, all right.
And then, literally. And then we cut to Alma getting the grate off. And this is fucking crazy because Danielle is outside putting makeup on, I guess. Alma climbs on the roof and is like, hello. And she falls off the roof and she fucking dies.
I didn't know she died at this point. Like, I thought she just, like, fell. And so it wasn't until, like, later when her body is found that I knew she was dead. Like, wow. I know that, I don't know if that's dumb of me to just presume she wasn't dead.
It looked like she landed in bushes.
And we saw earlier, Orson's fell broke from a single branch 5 feet from the ground.
Yeah, and Orson somehow survived. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so I just assumed she was just, like, hurt, injured.
Yeah, I think it had to have been at the angle because it looks like it was her neck when they find her body later. So I think it might have just been the angle she fell. I don't know. Do you think it's... How do you feel about the fact that they, spoiler alert, killed two major characters in this episode?
Well, technically one didn't die.
Oh, you're right. I keep thinking Gloria's dead, and she's not. But did you expect them to kill Alma?
No. I think I'm still trying to decide how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
It just kind of took me aback when I saw it, and...
It feels anticlimactic.
It does. And I think I need some time to process that, which I know sucks for the episode right now, but I think,
well, like, we can do a memoriam. We can process it in the memoriam.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it does. It feels very anticlimactic for a villain, like a main season villain. And I know that Gloria became more of the main season villain, but I mean, both of their endings in this episode feel, it feels, and maybe I won't say at the end because I'll say it now. By the end of this episode, I was like, this feels too neat.
Yeah.
It's too neat of an ending for such a messy story. I feel like it needed a messier ending in like a good way. It just feels very clean in a way that's strange. Like, all the bad guys are dead. All right, we're done.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Dead or in a hospital for the rest of their lives. But hey, we got to go to the pizzeria. And everything's going really well.
Yeah. There's a line out the door. This is when Tom gives a very heartfelt speech.
Oh, that's later.
Never mind.
Tom tries to apologize to Lynette, and Lynette's like, nah, fuck off. Yeah. And Susan runs into Mikey Poo.
Yes.
And she immediately is like, I heard you talking about Orson. And he's like, hey, this line gutted me a bit. I was like, oh, shit, when he says it's complicated. And she responds, it always is with you.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, wowie, zowie. That was a deep cut into Mike. makes me very sad for my Muzin shippers.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, real quick, can I ask you a question?
Ask me away.
You know the Spice Girls?
No. Yes. Yes, I do.
You know, they have a saying that they have in one of their songs. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be applied to this next scene. This is not a very good lead up.
Tonight is the night when two become one.
I was going to say, I want a man, not a boy who thinks he can.
Oh. Oh. Oh, when Melanie C. says, boy who thinks he can.
Oh, God, my voice.
Oh, my God. I bet no one wanted to hear us do bad karaoke, and yet they did. You're correct. I wish Gabby had just screamed that at Zach in this moment when she says, you fucking lied about us having sex. You are a little baby child because men don't play fucking games like this, which is incorrect. Plenty of men play bullshit games, but you know what I mean. And she's like, be honest, stop being a little baby, and maybe people will like you. And she fucks off.
Yeah.
And then Edie's titties are here.
Lesbian of the episode nominee.
Her tits.
Yeah, I mean, we gotta build that lesbian sometime.
I know. Yeah, let's nominate her tits. They look great. God.
Yeah, so she starts to make a toast. A Tom toast.
A toast to Tom.
Tom takes over and starts talking about how he loves his partner, Lynette.
His partner.
Love wins.
Wow, he was a straight guy calling his spouse partner before anybody else was.
I can't believe he fucking threw the first brick.
He threw the first brick at Stonewall. He is the ally.
The Stonewall Tom movie Scotto. That came out in 2012, but it stars Tom Scotto.
I mean, it did star a white twink who didn't exist instead of the black and Latina trans women that actually existed. So, I'd believe it if Tom Scotto was in that movie. Why not?
And then I vomited.
Why would you propose at a fucking pizza parlor?
Opening night. Your friend's friend just gave a very heartfelt speech about how much he loves his wife and is so happy to start a new business. And this is his night.
Their night.
Hey, guys. I'm going to make this about me for a second. Sorry. Hey, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to make this about me for a second. Susan.
And also, he doesn't have a ring in this scene. He, like, doesn't propose with a ring. He just is like, will you marry me? And she's like, yeah. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? What?
I bit a hole out of this pepperoni, you know? How you used to do with bologna when you were a kid, make little bologna donuts. You ever do that?
No.
Never mind. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
All right, I'll just leave it at that and we will move on.
Must be a British thing, yeah.
Must be a British thing.
Gosh, once again, if we didn't lose them before, the UK listeners are out now. We love you guys. This is stupid. She says yes, and I hate it. And little Mike, tag yourself, I'm Mike, just looking disgusted in the corner.
Can I, Can I say something?
You can say anything you want, baby.
The next thing that happened, my notes, I said, thank God, time for a real couple to shine. Because after Ian proposes, Zach gets up on the table and proposes to Gabby. Did you forget about that?
No, I didn't. I have a question. Did people know about them being friends? Because Lynette and Tom both look at each other like, where the fuck did that come from? Also, Zach just being in the neighborhood again. I'm surprised they didn't have a scene where everyone was like, why is Zach Young hanging out around here again? He's been gone for a year and a half.
You don't understand. He has long hair. He doesn't wear glasses. How are they supposed to know who this cool rocker guy is? He has that wears leather jackets stubble and button-ups.
And Gabby immediately pulls him outside. It's like, get the fuck out of here. And we don't really see that scene yet because we have to cut back to the hospital.
Yes. Where get Orson.
Yeah.
And
a nurse is bringing him his medication. And he's like, I need to see my wife. And she's like, oh, no, she checked out. And also, your sweet little mama called to make sure that you would not be let out till the morning. What a sweet mama. And he's like, what? And then we see Michael Myers, a.k.a. Gloria, pulling out a kitchen knife.
Can I read the note I
please do.
The way his mother is like, yes, I will put Bree to sleep and then slice her up into thousands of little pieces to actually kill her.
Bake her into a meat pie. Serve it to him. Titus Steven Andronicus, Zana. Sweeney Todd. It all connects.
Well, we see her.
She pulls out the knife. Yeah, she pulls out the knife and then it like quickly cuts back to the Gabby-Zach fight.
Yes. I mostly remember the Gabby and Carlos stuff from this scene, if you want to talk a little bit about the Gabby's
Oh, back. I mean, it's just Gabby being like, we can't fucking be friends. And he's like, I don't want to just be friends with you. And she's like, great, then go away. Like, we this clearly isn't working. I tried to be nice to you and you fucking ruined it. And he tries to insult her by saying, when you're old and alone, you're going to regret this, which I don't think she will. No. but whatever. But she does seem to take it to heart and he walks off. And then you're right. Carlos comes out. And I thought this was the best they've ever been.
Yes.
As a couple, like communicating clearly, and it was just like sweet, and I actually cared about them.
He brings her a beer, which is nice.
That's cute.
And she thanks him for being there.
Yeah.
Because like it feels really nice to just have a friend and to have somebody be there for her. And Carlos is very open and honest and says, I don't know how much longer I can do this.
He's in love with her still. Yeah. And we all knew that, but he's finally telling, he's finally kind of telling her, like, it is hard to just be your friend because, you know, you're an easy person to love. And I loved the line when he said what you said, I don't know how much longer I can do this. And she said, hold out as long as you can because I need you. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Do I love them? I hated them so much. And then I loved this scene. This is literally the best this couple's ever been for me. I want to see them build on this. I love this. I love the idea of them becoming friends again. Because friendship is the best basis for a romance.
Yeah.
And I don't know. As of now, as long as Carlos stays not being an abusive, angry piece of shit, I am okay with watching them grow back together.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
If they grow back together and they are better for each other.
Yes. Yes. Ooh,
I would love to see that. I would love to see them grow as people.
I would like to see it.
Yeah. We then cut to Bree. I loved the way she was like, I'm so sleepy.
And Gloria just standing at her bedside like a fucking creep.
She's just staring at her.
She loves drugging people because she really definitely put something in that soup.
Yeah.
And Gloria starts drawing a romantic candlelit bath for Bree. This bathroom, is this the first time we've ever seen this bathroom? Because a bathtub in the middle of the bathroom is the wildest shit I've ever seen in my life.
We forgot to say something.
Oh, that Andrew go, like Andrew sees.
Yeah,
Danielle,
Andrew's gonna
like,
show up in a minute.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew sees Danielle and he's like, "Fuck you," and he leaves.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, sorry.
You know, we're doing our best. We're both losing our minds. We're going through it, okay? I've never seen a bathtub in the middle of, I guess, freaking
Clawfoot tubs.
Gabby's is also in the middle of the, what is going on Wisteria Lane?
I think maybe that's just how luxury homes are.
I can't even imagine. One, I can't imagine ever living in owning a home.
Yes.
Two, I feel like I'd feel very exposed taking my little baths in the middle of the room. No walls around me to secure me. I'd feel so exposed, naked and afraid.
That's the real show. That's the real test.
Naked and afraid is me sitting in a bathtub.
We find out in this scene that Mother Hodge staged her husband's suicide, and she intends to do the exact same thing, the exact same way. This makes her a serial killer. Somebody in the exact same way makes Mother Hodge a serial killer.
Yes, she is fully a serial killer. She, like, I don't know. She's like, I refuse to let Orson be like his father and be a cheater. And I want to say the reason why she thinks Orson is cheating is because she is so Catholic. She doesn't believe in divorce.
Yeah.
Imagine being so, like, religious. You're a serial killer, which I think is common, but for serial killers, I suppose. I have no idea. I'm talking out my ass. That's just, like, the wildest justification for her killing people. Yeah. She's just wild. She's wild.
I'm so confused about Mother Hodge's strength as well. Like, she has a broken hip.
And she can carry a full-grown woman?
She just fucking drags Bree across the room.
It was pretty fun. And gets her in the bathtub. I don't know how the fuck she does that.
I don't know. So, sequence of events. I'm going to fly through this. Is that okay?
Yes. Andrew's a prince. That's all I wrote down. So let's
Andrew
go.
Storms home, runs up the stairs. Mommy, mommy, mommy. Boom. Bonk. You know that bonk meme?
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that. Because Mother Hodge hits Andrew. He falls down the stairs. And then Orson's home.
Right? I mean, yeah. Gloria keeps prepping the murder. Orson pulls up himself, drags himself into the home, finds little Andrew on the staircase, and is like, oh, fuck. And he walks upstairs. He sees Bree, and he is instantly triggered by the same visuals of his father's death, which also, obviously, I'm not saying this something unique, but this also gives context to his reaction to Danielle's suicide, which was also staged similarly to his father and now Bree. And this is why suicide is a trigger for him. And it totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it all, yeah. And this also puts the pieces in his brain together that his mother killed his father.
Yeah.
Because I truly believe that this is the moment where he realizes that. Because absolutely. I think he fully believed that his father committed suicide.
Yeah.
And so he finds out in this moment, seeing the exact same sight he saw when he was a kid, he knows that his mom killed his dad.
This fight was wild. Him, like, breaking her, like, wrist on his own knee and her. And I was worried. I forgot. It was so scary that Bree's body slumps into the water like she's going to drown.
Yeah.
She could have drowned had he not gotten to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was exciting. My blood was pumping during this fight scene.
But then Mother Hodge falls down. She's having a stroke.
Random.
Kind of feels like the Alma death to me.
Yeah, it's just sudden, anticlimactic, and strange.
So she has a stroke. Orson pulls the body double out of the tub.
Yeah.
He then goes to... Does he take his... I can't remember if he takes his mother across the street or if he's just going across the street to check something.
No, he's and taking... taking his mother there because Andrew's like, what are we going to do with her? And he's like, I'm going to take her to Alma's. Yeah. To go have her stroke over there. So I think he didn't know Alma was in the attic and what had happened. So I think his goal was literally to just take his mother to Alma and be like, she's your problem now. I think that was his goal. But you're right. He saw something quite different when he arrived.
He saw Alma's body in the bushes.
Rest in peace.
So send us your favorite Alma moments.
Yeah. I mean, literally, we're going to do a little. We haven't done a memoriam in a hot second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's do a memoriam up for Alma and maybe a mix of a send-off for Mother Hodge, though she's not dead, but I keep thinking she's dead, so maybe that's enough.
Yeah. We then go to Bree waking up. She asks what happened, what's going to happen, and Orson says, tomorrow morning, Ida's going to stumble upon a gruesome sight. Alma fell from the roof, and his mom will have died having a stroke.
From seeing the body.
Yeah, from seeing the body. And they faked a suicide note for Alma. And it says, I know what you did. It makes me sick. I'm going to tell. I guess the suicide note didn't say that.
No, but she had written it right when she faked her suicide earlier.
Yes.
To pull him over. So, like, it was in her handwriting. Like, it was kind of neat. Once again, everything's tied up with too much in a little bit of a neat bow for me. And the teeth is there. He put the teeth out. So he's just literally like, they'll find the note, they'll find the teeth. Mike's innocent. No one gets charged with murder. And we're going to go on a honeymoon. And it's just, it's too clean. It's too clean.
This could make it a little less clean, but I don't think it's ever going to be brought up again. But if it does, I'm going to be very excited.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that Mother Hodge did not die from her stroke.
Wild.
She is very much alive, but she is paralyzed. She can't speak anymore. She can't move. But her brain is still active.
Yeah. And so basically, she's just going to be in a hospital probably for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
And
Orson's never going to see her again.
Which is totally in his right. She's abusive and terrible and colluded in his rape as well as many, many years of abuse. And I'm happy for him.
And he's just like, you get to live in limbo forever now.
And I do think it's too neat, but I did like this episode, or not this episode, wow. Well, yes. But I liked this monologue.
Yes. From the point of view, I thought it tied in very nicely with the beginning.
Especially. Yeah, and also just, like, as an idea of, like, a survivor and a person who's experienced trauma, like, I loved the way it was written, the saying, like, instead of thinking about his past, he was seeing the future ahead of him and the life he gets to have now that he is free of these things that have been pulling him back to his past, this abuse, this trauma. And I did think that was kind of beautiful. Like, I thought this monologue was a really beautiful sentiment of thinking about what your life can be like without pain and secrets holding you back. Yeah. I thought it was lovely.
Yeah.
That's the end of the episode.
Woo.
That was a jam-packed fucking episode.
Hell yeah.
And we're going to go into these next 8 episodes of who knows what. We don't have a mystery anymore. We solved the mystery. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah. I'm interested to see the what the season wrap-up is going to look like.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, I'm so pumped to get to season 4. I love watching this show with you so much. I know I say it every week, but I love watching this show with you. Oh, and yeah, we'll do a memoriam for Alma, so keep an eye on our Instagram and we'll post where you could send us your favorite Alma moments, I guess. I don't know.
Should we say she's bye to Mother Hodge?
Yeah, let's do a Mother Hodge, Alma, maybe like a villain send off.
Yeah.
Memoriam, if you will. And yeah. And we'll dive back into the season. So with that, if you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at WisteriaGaze, _ on Instagram at WisteriaGaze, regular on Twitter, as well as our website, Wisteria.gay.
And on that website, you can find links to our merch page.
I've been adding some new shit. So,
whoa.
Yeah. Keep an eye out.
Our Discord. And our Patreon. We mentioned our Patreon early this episode, but it is pay what you can, a minimum of $2, and you get access to things like show notes, ad-free episodes. We just put up a kind of commentary track about John Tucker Must Die, which we also referenced in this episode.
Yeah. Watch along. My audio is not the best in that, so I apologize, but we're gonna do it better next time and probably do more of those because that was just fun.
It was really fun. John Tucker's in it.
John Tucker.
And he must die.
Yeah, let us know what movies you want us to watch, and we'll just watch some freaking movies and talk about it.
Yeah, and also on our Patreon, you get episode shout-outs. So we're going to take the next minute to shout-out our patrons.
I want
to
shout-out Amanda.
Annie.
Kaylin.
Cheryl.
Drusilla LaFay. Ooh, I got to say it this week.
Yes. Elise.
Helena.
Kim.
Liv.
Lydia.
Nadia.
Sarah Schroeder.
Sarah Swihart.
Thank you so much for being our patrons and supporting the show.
Ah, you're so juicy, and we love you so, 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 so much.
I love reviews.
Tell me about it.
Reviews are great. They help people find our podcast, and they make our freaking day. At the end of every episode, we like posing a question to get those review juices flowing. And I think this week's question should be,
what pizza parlor proposal are you doing?
Parrots. And there's a parrot at every table. There's a live parrot at every table.
Okay.
It's not my best answer.
Who are you proposing to?
Who am I proposing to? For some reason, I thought you meant proposal. Like, what is your pitch for a pizza?
No, I meant like who are in the pizza parlor are you proposing to and how?
It has
to be with parrots now, I think. You're proposing with the parrots, I feel like.
Yes. I have 1,000 parrots in a hunk of salami. Don't ask. Good. And
I didn't ask. Don't ask.
Good. And when the clock strikes 10:02 p.m.,
okay,
the parrots will be released, the meats will be gunk, they will be gooified, and I will be proposed, well, actually, not really gooified, I mean, they will be, let me explain how this is going to work. The tip of the meat log will fall off, right? Splash onto the floor, turning into goo. The parrots will fly out. As the parrots are flying out of the meat, the rest of the meat falls to the floor, also turns into goo, but the goo all melds together and turns into a beautiful emerald ring.
Oh.
And I scoop up the ring.
Yeah.
And I'm on one knee. And the parrots are all full in this pizza place. And they're surrounding who?
Who? Tell me.
But Ashley. It's 2098.
The kid, Ashley?
Yeah. It's 2098. We're both grown up.
Oh, yeah. You're both like 89.
Yeah. I'm like 100 and something. She's like 80. It's fine.
Yeah. Totally legal. Yeah.
Yeah. I figure like that kind of age gap is fine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When you're in your hundreds, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I'm going to propose to Lynette.
Okay.
And how I'm going to do it is I'm going to quite literally just like have a drink in my hand. I walk up to her at the bar at the pizza parlor and I go, hey, you single? And when she holds her hand up, I go, actually, I'm married. I reach my hand out. I pull her fucking ring off and I go, not anymore. Will you marry me? And I propose with her the ring she already owned.
That's like a million times better than whatever the hell I just said.
I had more time to think about it.
That's true. I just kind of spewed.
I love your spew.
If you want to find me on social medias, you can find me, Ned, at Ned Jorts, or Garfield's penis.
You said it. You can find me at Mackenzie Wilkes on Twitter.
Mackenzie Wilkes?
Mackenzie Wilkes, that's me.
I love you.
I love you, Ned Parker. I almost called you Ned Jorts, like that was your legal name.
It is. Everyone else out there, stay juicy.
Oh, stay juicy.